This is the Get Healthy 360 podcast, where we discuss topics related to your physical, mental, financial, and spiritual health. Your host is Dr. Chris Ferguson, board certified in anesthesiology and pain management. This podcast is for informational purposes only, and you should consult your primary health care provider before making any decisions related to your health. And here's your host, Dr. Chris Ferguson. Oh, one more thing before we start. If you like this episode, please consider rating us 5 stars. We would really appreciate it. Thanks very much.
Welcome to Get Healthy 360. Today we have with us Dr. Kalia. Huge honor to have him with us. Dr. Kalia specializes in interventional spine and cancer pain management with special expertise in advanced neuromodulation procedures. So we will be talking about what a neuromodulation procedure is. Dr. Kalia has earned his medical degree from Mahatma Gandhi Memorial College in Indore, India, and a master's degree in public health from Western Kentucky University in Bowling Green, Kentucky. His first residency was in preventive medicine and public health, followed by a physical medicine and rehabilitation at University of Rochester. He subsequently completed an ACGME approved medicine fellowship. So what that means is, for anyone who doesn't know, there's a lot of people who have fellowships, and then there are official fellowships that are sponsored by the approving bodies. So he has a very legitimate pain medicine fellowship at the University of Rochester, and additionally an FIPP, Fellow of Interventional Pain Practice certification from the World Institute of Pain. Dr. Kelly is a member of numerous national and international professional societies and sits on numerous subcommittees. He's part of the board of directors at Aspen, the American Society of Pain and Neuroscience, and Monroe County Medical Society. He is the fellowship director of Interventional Spine and Pain Fellowship Program at Rochester Regional Health and is involved in teaching medical students, residents, and fellows from other programs. He is also part of the faculty at national and international hands-on cadaver workshops for interventional spine and pain procedures. Dr. Kalia has presented his work on cancer pain management and advanced neuromodulation at multiple national and international conferences, including peer-reviewed journals in the field of pain medicine. He's also the current editor-in-chief of Advances in Clinical Medical Research and Healthcare Delivery Open Access Journal. So again, huge honor to have him with us. So what we're talking about in summary is, you have cancer and you have the oncologist treating the cancer, but what is not often talked about or spoken about is that when you have cancer, often you can have a lot of pain related to the cancer, and with a great team of oncologists, the survival rates are going up. So after the treatment of the cancer, there's a whole host of people, or a large subset of people, who will have chronic pain because of the radiation treatments or the chemotherapy treatments. And that is the topic of discussion today. So Dr. Kalia, huge honor to have you with us today.
Well, first of all, Chris, thank you for having me, and thank you for that introduction. Cancer pain management and cancer rehabilitation, a compendium of care, has been one of my passions. And, we actually recently launched our comprehensive cancer pain and rehabilitation program earlier this year in March, and honored to be here on your podcast to discuss these important topics.
So let's get into the details as to who actually, so someone gets a diagnosis of cancer, that's super scary, super, super scary. Anyone's going to be nervous. And everyone's, of course, familiar with the oncologist, and then sometimes there's a radiation oncologist that will use radiation to treat the cancer as well. But what's often not discussed is, what does a physical, because you're board certified in both specialties. So what does a physical medicine rehab doctor do? And what does a pain management doctor do?
Yeah, that's a really interesting and good question, because it's important to understand the differences between these two subspecialties. My first hat is the physical medicine rehabilitation specialist. So essentially, I'm a function doctor. My primary goal is to improve patients' function and quality of care. When patients are struggling with cancer or they're undergoing treatments of cancer, be it radiation or chemotherapy, they can have a significant impairment in their function. So as a functional doctor, my goal is to identify the gaps and identify those impairments in the function and develop an individualized plan for these patients so that they can return to their pre-morbid quality of life and function while they're going through the treatment. And the new concept, which is becoming really, really important these days, is the concept of prehabilitation. So as soon as patients get a diagnosis of cancer, they are evaluated by a multitude of specialists who specialize in identifying potential functional impairments which can happen because of either surgery or treatments of cancer. And we develop an individualized plan for these patients and actually prepare them to go through the surgery, the treatments of cancer, and make sure that they are functionally and physically prepared to go through those treatments. So it's really important to have an individualized rehabilitation plan as a part of the continuum of care for cancer these days.
Can you give me an example of what that would look like? I still can't get my head around what does that look like? What does prehabilitation mean?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So we know that certain cancers, depending upon the treatments they will be going through, there is a higher probability of having what we call cancer-related fatigue syndrome. Or in certain cases of breast cancer, after lymph node dissection, there's a very high probability of developing lymphedema in the arm, which can be really debilitating functionally for these patients. So from a prehabilitation standpoint, what we will do is, if we are anticipating compromise in their lung volumes, or we are anticipating that these patients will be developing cancer-related fatigue, there is a growing body of evidence that if we involve them in a structured physical therapy program, which focuses on aerobic training, then we can improve their reserves so that they can go through those exhaustive treatments, including surgery and other related cancer treatments, be it chemotherapy or radiation, and maintain their function and quality of life, not only through the treatments of cancer, but also after the treatments are done. Similarly, with lymphedema, that's a concept of active rehabilitation plan to use certain very specific physical therapy and occupational therapy techniques to make sure that the lymphedema, which is developed after the surgery, is managed appropriately, and which leads to maintenance of the premorbid function of that patient.
So correct me if I'm not misunderstanding you, So the physical medicine and rehabilitation specialist will come up with an individualized plan to optimize someone's health prior to undergoing the chemo radiation treatment to really facilitate the maximal and best outcome for that person before the treatment even starts.
Yes. And that's the concept of prehabilitation.
So how does physical medicine and rehabilitation interact with physical therapy? Because it's a muddy difference between what a physical medicine rehabilitation specialist does and what a physical therapist does.
Correct. So it's an interdisciplinary model of care. So I can share the current model we have. So when we see a patient in our clinics, the patient is evaluated by a physical medicine rehabilitation specialist first, who identifies either current impairments or potential impairments, and then they develop a very specific plan for physical therapy or occupational therapy for that patient, and which requires cross communication with the therapists, and patients actually follow that specific prescription which is provided by a physical medicine rehabilitation specialist to go and seek consultations with physical therapy and occupational therapy to implement that treatment plan.
So you did the physical medicine rehabilitation specialty, but then you also became subspecialized in pain medicine. So what is pain medicine and how is that different than physical medicine and rehabilitation?
Yeah, so the pain medicine fellowship, especially the ACGME approved pain medicine fellowship, is a multidisciplinary model of care. It is open to specialists from anesthesiology, physical medicine rehabilitation, neurology, psychiatry, and recently diagnostic radiology. So you can see a lot of different specialists kind of enter into this structured curriculum for a year to become experts in pain medicine. After the year, rigorous 1 year of training, you are trained in identifying different pain presentations and develop an individualized pain management plan, be it medication optimization and or involving some advanced interventional treatment options to improve these patients' pain and quality of life and function. So you can see there's a lot of overlap, and there's a very straightforward extension of the philosophy of care from physical medicine rehabilitation into pain medicine.
So I think that it's really important to delineate who you are seeing, because every specialty is a little bit different. So you really, if you're a patient, you really should be asking, who's treating me and what are their qualifications? And I've gone through your very esteemed biography. So just to put it in perspective, how competitive is it to get into a pain fellowship? Because they're not, so to put it in context, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, there may be 350 pain doctors graduating every year.
That's correct.
So how difficult is it to become an actual pain physician?
So as you can see, you know, over the years, the specialists who can apply for a fellowship in pain medicine have increased pretty significantly. And initially, the field was started by anesthesiologists, but over the years, now you have five different subspecialties or five different fields of medicine which can enter into this ACGME approved pain fellowship program. So you can imagine it's a pretty competitive fellowship program.
So the reason I'm highlighting this is because if someone's an ACGME accredited pain fellow, meaning they've gone through the actual approved fellowship, that is a distinction, and I would suggest looking for it, because it speaks to the rigor in which they were selected in order to do this specialty. So in some background for this interview, from my understanding, it's a few hundred applicants for maybe two or three spots.
That's correct.
So, and then of course, Dr. Calio, you're teaching these fellows. So you're really an elite physician teaching incoming physicians how to be pain doctors. And you also have the background of physical medicine and rehabilitation. So you are running both.
That's true.
So how do you marry these two things together where you practice, the rehab part and then the interventional pain part?
Yeah, so I can briefly share my experience. As far as cancer pain is concerned, I think the key to success is a true interdisciplinary model of care. I just happen to be both board certified in physical medicine rehabilitation and pain medicine. But the compendium of care involves other specialists as well, like palliative care, psychologists, medical oncology, radiation oncology. Sometimes these patients have a lot of biopsychosocial aspects. So access to social work is also really important. So for having a successful model to take care of these patients, you really need to bring all these specialists under the same roof. Initially, when I started practicing cancer pain, I was doing what we call a multidisciplinary model of care. So it's important to understand the difference between interdisciplinary care and multidisciplinary care. In multidisciplinary care, the team members from different specialists work together, but each remain within their specific disciplines. So I was actually seeing patients in my clinic and developing a plan for both pain management and rehabilitation care as well. But patients were seeking these therapies all around the town. We were getting referrals, but the outcomes and patient satisfaction were still struggling. So we got together the team and we identified what the gaps were, and what we realized that if we all come under the same umbrella and do what we call cohabitation clinic, where all the specialists, be it palliative care, be it radiation oncology, be it medical oncology, be it pain medicine, be it rehabilitation specialists, if we all see the patients under the same umbrella of cancer center, we can develop an individualized plan for these patients with crosstalk and crosswalk among ourselves. So now I actually go to the cancer center, and we see the patients together. They have a palliative care evaluation, they have pain medicine evaluation, they have rehabilitation medicine evaluation. In my case, I happen to offer pain medicine and rehabilitation medicine expertise myself, but other models of care across country, they will have a different pain specialist and a different rehabilitation specialist offering these treatments. So the bottom line is, I think in order to have a successful cancer pain program, it needs to be a true interdisciplinary model of care, which can bring in all the specialists together under the same roof and develop a common plan for these cancer patients.
Now, everything you're saying makes perfect sense. But do you have a sense, and if you don't, that's fine, but do you have a sense of how many cancer treatment centers have an interdisciplinary model like you just discussed?
There are very few in the country. I don't know the exact number off the top of my head, but there are very few specialized cancer centers which have this model. So I'm going to try to give a little history on this. So Institute of Medicine recently came up with a report which stated that every cancer survivor has to have an individualized cancer survivorship care plan. And they laid a lot of emphasis on the rehabilitation piece, which needs to be included in that cancer survivorship plan, individualized to the patient. For any cancer center to be accredited through Commission on Cancer, which is part of the American College of Surgery, they have to follow those Institute of Medicine constructs. And the only way your cancer center is going to be accredited through COC is if you have all these individual therapists and individual disciplines of care as part of your comprehensive team. So recently, there has been a lot of stress on the importance of incorporating rehabilitation medicine specialists and pain medicine specialists into the compendium of care for cancer. We all know, cancer survivorship rates are increasing exponentially. You mentioned earlier in your introduction that, the treatments of cancer have improved significantly. So we are expecting by 2040, we'll be having close to 26 million cancer survivors. And they probably will have some functional impairments due to the cancer treatments they have gone through. It could be either, pain secondary to surgical interventions, or functional impairments related to other treatments of cancer, be it radiation or chemotherapy. So it's really important and critical to have a interdisciplinary model of care, which includes pain medicine specialists, rehabilitation medicine specialists, pain psychologists, social work, complementary medicine specialists, and also palliative care team on the folks to develop this compendium of care for cancer survivors.
So we discussed at length what the physical medicine rehab physician does. They really work to prehab someone and then help them with their functional improvements afterwards. Let's talk about the rest of the team. So what does, and I know this will be very helpful to someone, especially if they're just diagnosed with cancer. So what does an oncologist do and what role do they play? And what does a radiation oncologist do and what role do they play?
So a medical oncologist is the captain of the ship. When a patient is diagnosed with cancer, the medical oncologists are your doctors. They're your quarterbacks. They are responsible for developing a plan of treatment for the cancer, which may include radiation. So if you do need radiation for the treatment of cancer, or even sometimes palliative treatments, then you will end up seeing a radiation oncologist who specializes in developing a radiation treatment plan based on the type of cancer, location of the cancer, and stage of the cancer.
So for those of for anyone who's not listening without a medical background, when you say palliative, what do you mean by that?
So palliative essentially means symptomatic management or the treatments which are not geared towards curing cancer.
So you have the oncologists, they deal with the medications. You have the radiation oncologists that treat the cancer with radiation, either to treat it and ideally cure it, or make it less symptomatic. But then there's also the specialty of palliative care. How do they fit in? And what is palliative care and how do they fit into this network?
Yeah, so palliative care specialists also work hand in hand with pain medicine and rehabilitation medicine specialists, because the philosophy of care remains the same. The philosophy of care of all these three specialists is basically to improve cancer patients' quality of life and function. Palliative care comes in as a specialist who focuses on symptom management, be it symptoms related to chemotherapy, nausea, vomiting, anxiety, and pain is also one of the symptoms. So some of the pain management treatments are also driven by palliative care, but they also bring in another expertise to talk and have some very difficult discussions with patients about goals of care. If the cancer is progressing rapidly, then we need to kind of sit down and have a discussion around goals of care and understand what the biopsychosocial aspects of that patient who's suffering from cancer are, what is the support system that this patient has, and what other needs these patients have to deal with not only their cancer, but cancer-related burden.
And what is a social worker and what role do they play?
So a social worker will bring in a lot of expertise. They will help in coordination of care. There are a lot of treatments, there are a lot of medications or other treatments of cancer which will require, prior authorization from the insurances. Sometimes patients will need additional, medical devices to improve their quality of life and function. So social workers will help coordinate, all those services at the back end. There is also a subspecialty of social worker which can offer therapies, be it biofeedback, cognitive behavioral therapy, and some of the other therapies which will allow patients to understand and go through the initial anxiety of cancer diagnosis. Also help with some of the associated symptom management especially pain, where some of these therapies can help decrease the central perception of pain by using biofeedback mechanism and other therapies. They can also use motivational interviewing techniques to motivate these patients to go through their treatments and help manage their symptoms.
And I think with all things, your mental status has a huge role in either your success or failure. So I don't know if you have any specific comments regarding psychologists and how a psychologist would fit into this team.
Yes, pain psychologists are really hard to find. So I think a licensed social work who has expertise in doing interventions like biofeedback, motivational interviewing, cognitive behavioral therapy can play the same role. But if you can find a pain psychologist who can be part of your team, I think they bring in additional expertise to not only offer these interventions, but they can also do some testing to identify, you know, their underlying anxiety or other associated mental health diagnoses, which might be affecting their perception of pain and their expression of pain.
And then you mentioned complementary alternative medicine, but often, and it's interesting that you brought that up, because often alternative medicine options are at odds with traditional medicine. So how do you marry those two together for someone who is still seeking traditional chemotherapy, radiation, et cetera?
So I think the complementary medicine options actually are, as they say, they are complementary, right? So the focus is definitely with the traditional medicine to cure the cancer. But if the patients are struggling or having a significant burden due to the cancer or cancer treatments, then some of these options like acupuncture, massage therapy, meditation, and so on and so forth, have reasonable evidence to support their use and be a part of the entire compendium of care.
So let's now talk about pain management. So what does a pain management doctor do that's different than those whole host of other specialties that you just discussed?
So as a pain management specialist, our job is to not only understand what is the underlying cause or what we call etiology of pain, but also understand where exactly the pain is getting modulated so that we can choose appropriate treatments and be much more precise in delivering our treatments to those areas, which is the source of pain in these patients.
So we already discussed there's not a lot of pain doctors graduating every year, 350-ish. Of the pain doctors that are existing, that are ACGME certified, what percentage of those would you say have an expertise in cancer pain management?
So, Chris, we have had these discussions in the past. I think cancer pain management is a dying art. There are not a lot of doctors who are graduating through the pain medicine fellowship programs who are actively practicing cancer pain medicine. Aside from, you know, some of the premier institutes in the country like MD Anderson or Memorial Sloan Kettering, a couple of other centers in the country, University of Utah and few more. Besides those, there are not a lot of places where you get exposed to the compendium of care of cancer pain. So it is up to us where we have to keep the oil burning and pass on the art of cancer pain management to young graduating fellows.
We'll have to give a shout out to my fellow. So for everyone who's listening, I'm board certified in anesthesia and pain management. So unlike Dr. Kelly, my specialty is not rehab. It's actually anesthesia. And then I did the fellowship in pain management. So I will have to mention the Detroit Medical Center, because they have the very large Karmanos Cancer Center, which is, if you've ever been to Detroit, it is a massive building dedicated to treating cancer pain management. And the current fellowship director of the pain program, Harry Sukumaran, is a phenomenal program director and does a very good job treating cancer pain with a whole host of fantastic techniques. So if someone has cancer pain, they have the whole team of treatment options, but I think it's worth mentioning that these other treatments are available, because it's unfortunate, but I know for a fact that there are people who had really painful cancers and they just didn't really know where to go. So let's talk about, as a pain doctor now, what can you offer someone who is either in active therapy with cancer, or they survived, which is great. They have survived, they're in remission, but they still have severe pain because of the chemotherapy and radiation.
Broadly speaking, the cancer pain treatments can be divided into three broad buckets. One bucket is we use what we call nerve blocks. So in simple words, what we're trying to do is we're trying to identify where exactly the pain is getting modulated. And if we are successful in identifying that site, then we can use either plain local anesthetics, similar to like lidocaine. When you go to a dentist's office, they give you some lidocaine, which is very short acting and short lasting, but it gives us confirms the site where the pain is getting modulated, where we can come back and follow up with what we call in scientific terms, neurolysis, or in simple words, we can use certain chemical agents like good old alcohol, or certain other types of chemicals to destroy that bundle of nerve temporarily, which can provide some long-term pain relief for these patients. The second bucket is more advanced therapies, which what we call neuromodulation, or in simple words...
Just to jump in. So before, because that you just said a lot and glossed over a lot. So let's take the example of, I think a classic example is someone has pancreatic cancer pain. Mm-hmm. And for anyone who isn't familiar with pancreatic cancer pain, it is a really, really miserable cancer to have. And it's, if you don't have a good pain specialist, it is a really not pleasant way to die. But if you have a good pain doctor who's familiar with cancer treatments, it makes... I don't think this is an understatement, like a world of difference. So can you walk us through, like, let's just to give a concrete example of how you use diagnostic blocks and then alcohol blocks in the treatment of pancreatic cancer pain?
Yeah. So as you said, Chris, pancreatic cancer pain can be really debilitating. So the first step is to obviously identify if the pain is really visceral in nature. What we basically mean is it's coming from the involvement of the pancreas itself and the structures around it. There's a structure right in front of our major blood vessel, aorta, and just behind the pancreas, it's known as celiac plexus, which is responsible for carrying a majority of the pain from pancreatic cancer. So we can access that through a lot of different minimally invasive techniques under X-ray guidance or ultrasound guidance, or our gastroenterologists and podologists can also access it through the gut. And we can use neurolytic agents like alcohol to temporarily destroy that bundle of nerve, which can provide long-term pain relief anywhere from 6 to 9 months. And it's almost life-changing to see the response in pain after we do this procedure for a patient who's suffering from abdominal pain secondary to pancreatic cancer. There are some technical nuances regarding this procedure. If you're not able to access celiac plexus itself, then there are other bundle of nerves. We call them splanchnic nerves. There is a possibility of targeting those nerves and either use chemical agents to destroy them or even use radio waves or what we call radio frequency ablation to destroy those bundle of nerves, and that can be equally effective as celiac plexus.
Do you have any comments on the efficacy of the splanchnic nerve ablations versus celiac plexus ablations?
So there are no head-to-head trials between these two therapies. The only literature we have is from the retrospective studies published. There are a few prospective studies published as well. So the overall success rate with celiac plexus ranges between 60 to 75% at the end of 9 months. Splanchnic, again, you know, there are not good quality studies in cancer pain on splanchnics, but a lot of case reports and almost a level 4 evidence for that specific site of target.
So I'm going to make a comment or just... I'll make a comment here. So for anyone who's listening to this and they're thinking, oh, you should do more studies on cancer patients and figure out what works best, that in theory is a great thing to do. However, in practice, how do you really run a study? Because if you're running a level 1 study where you have a sham control, meaning you're injecting nothing like saline, and then you're actually giving treatment, how can you really ethically do a study on a cancer patient who's in a ton of pain? Like it's just logistically very difficult to do. Do you have any comments on that?
No, I agree with you. I think that has been the primary reason why we don't have, you know, great level 1 evidence on most of the cancer pain treatments. So a lot of work has been done by a lot of thought leaders in our field. Lisa Stearns, who I have to mention her name. You know, she has been the pillar of the field of pain medicine, especially in cancer pain management. And I think her work has guided us and continues to guide us in all aspects of cancer pain management. And you know, she recently, before her untimely death, she published a really nice overview and paper on the cost effectiveness of what we call targeted drug delivery in managing different types of cancer pain. So even that specific study, you know, was a retrospective analysis. So it's kind of a, as you said, it's really hard to design true level 1 sham controlled studies in cancer pain patients.
And I think, so this is where I'm going to make a comment of, a lot of people think they can go on YouTube and look things up, or they can go into a book or go in and do a PubMed search and figure things out. But in this specific field, there just is not a lot of literature for those exact reasons, because it's exceptionally difficult and ethically challenging to do studies on people who are dying of cancer. It's just logistically miserable. So I have to mention another name, another pillar in the field, Dr. Leonardo Caprell, who was at Cleveland Clinic, and now he's at Wake, I believe it's at Wake Forest. And I remember having a lot of conversations with him as to how he does things. And he has a lot of, I think, very valid thoughts on how things should be done, specifically splanchnic nerve ablations versus celiac plexus ablations. And we're getting kind of into the weeds of the details of these procedures. But I think that just speaks to, for people who are listening, if you have cancer, you just really need to understand who's treating you and their experience with cancer pain, because it's sometimes a very large difference in the quality of care. So, and to speak to Dr. Kelly's expertise, when I have questions, he's definitely top of the list of people I'm calling, and he's definitely humored me with many, many phone calls with exceptionally difficult patients. So we talked about, that's an example. So you figure out those neurolytic blocks, you do a diagnostic block to block the nerves that are causing the pain, and then you can put some alcohol on it and zap those nerves and put them to sleep for quite a while. The next thing you mentioned was neuromodulation. So can you comment on what that is?
Absolutely. So as the name kind of alludes to, what we're trying to do is we're trying to modulate the nervous system, whether it's the peripheral nerves or your spinal cord or your brain. Those are the three major sites where the pain can get modulated. So we are using small little wires or small little electrodes to pass the electric current either directly on the peripheral nerve or the spinal cord or the brain to dampen down the pain signals which are traveling through these individual structures. Most of the accepted indications for neuromodulation ranges between, you know, failed back surgery syndrome or what we call complex regional pain syndrome. But for cancer pain, as it's a majority of cancer pain does include what we call neuropathic pain, or in simple words, pain which is originating from either direct injury to the nerve or aberration of nerve signal transmission due to the cancer treatments. So we can use these very specific very specific devices to dampen down these pain signals to help patients' pain and quality of life.
So I'm going to give a shout out again to some pillars of the field. So Dr. Alan Burton, he was in charge of, I believe it was MD Anderson's pain program. And then Nilesh Patel, who has a lot, he's in charge of. So Alan Burton, he's now the medical director of Abbott and has a wealth of information because, again, he was in charge of MD Anderson's program. And then Nilesh Patel, who is in charge of Boston Scientific, who also has a wealth of information because he was at the Cleveland Clinic treating cancer. So it's great that you have people with extensive cancer treatment backgrounds treating, in charge of these neuromodulation devices. So can you comment about specific maybe examples, or because it sounds, it's a little bit vague. So neuromodulation treating cancer pain, can you give any specific examples of how, say, spinal cord stimulators or peripheral nerve stimulators can be used to treat cancer pain?
Oh, sure. Absolutely. A common example which comes to my mind is, you know, radiation treatment after breast cancer diagnosis. One of the common side effects of radiation which can happen is what we call brachial plexopathy, or there's a bundle of nerve in the neck which can be affected by radiation, which can lead to pretty debilitating pain in the arms. So that's a nerve pain condition which can respond to neurostimulation options very nicely if we place the leads right in the cervical region and stimulate the dorsal columns in the spinal cord, we can affect the downstream modulation of pain which is happening at the brachial plexus and improve their function and quality of life. There is also emerging evidence in using actually peripheral nerve stimulators, where we place a small little lead right on top of the brachial plexus and help modulate those signals through those small little devices as well. Similarly, if you have what we call focal pain, which is limited to two or less than two dermatomes. Classic example which comes into mind is post-thoracotomy syndrome or post-mastectomy syndrome, but in simple words, pain after having breast cancer surgery or your chest wall surgery for lung cancer. They're very highly specific devices which we can use, primarily what we call DRG or dorsal root ganglion stimulators, where we can isolate the specific nerves and the nerve roots where the pain signal is coming from and help modulate that signal at the dorsal root ganglion level.
And again, I'll emphasize that this is not, it's a common, but it's not ubiquitous, if that makes sense. So if anyone who's listening to this and they have these treatments, and you want to look into the dorsal ganglion stimulation, you really have to look for a physician who can do it? Because not all physicians can do that technique.
That's correct. There are very few physicians who are trained and have the expertise in doing this procedure effectively and safely.
So any other thoughts on neuromodulation for cancer pain?
Also, you know, a shout out goes to Dr. Robert Levy. You know, he was the pioneer. He's actually the current president of International Neuromodulation Society. About 4 years ago, he wrote an editorial and basically really defined the field of neuromodulation. Initially, it was kind of loosey-goosey, and we didn't have a very specific structure for neuromodulation. What he basically did, he included not only the neurostimulation therapies, but also included the delivery of pharmaceutical agents, which is medications, into either the peripheral nervous system or the central nervous system to help modulate the pain signal and improve pain for these patients. So that brought in a therapy which is known as targeted drug delivery into the field of neuromodulation. It was already there, but it provided a structure where we could think of targeted drug delivery in the compendium of care of neuromodulation.
So for anyone who doesn't have a medical background or who isn't familiar with pain management, can you explain what that means?
Absolutely. So targeted drug delivery, in very simple words, is basically delivering medications directly at the source or where the pain is getting modulated. Most commonly used therapy of targeted drug delivery is what we call pain pump. It's a commonly used device where a tiny little catheter is directly implanted in the spine, which is connected to a programmable pump, and everything is implanted underneath the skin. Nothing is external. Medication directly goes into the spine. It bypasses your entire body, so no systemic side effects, or I should say very minimal systemic side effects, no constipation, and you get more elegant and much more precise pain control by delivering the medication exactly where most of the receptors are concentrated, which is the spine. Now, there are other aspects of targeted drug delivery which are still being developed, primarily, delivering medications directly into the brain. There's a lot of work going on in delivering medications at the peripheral nerve level. So currently, the system which we have, which has almost level one evidence for cancer pain management, is what we call a pain pump. It's a really elegant device. It's almost giving a lot of freedom to our cancer patients, where once the pump is implanted, they actually get a remote to carry with them. And if they're having breakthrough pain through the day, then that remote wirelessly communicates to the programmable pump, and they can give themselves additional boluses of medication to help with breakthrough pain. They won't overdose on it because all the programming is done by the physicians and the providers who are expert in managing this specific device.
Let me clarify this and tell me if I'm misspeaking. So a way to think about it is, I think a lot more people are familiar with labor epidurals than they are with pain pumps. Not a lot of people even know what a pain pump is. And when I say people, I mean physicians or people in healthcare. So what I would suggest is think about it like a labor epidural, except instead of having the catheter in your back and then it's hooked up to this pump that you have to walk around with a pole on, where the pump's on a pole, there's a little pump implanted either in your abdomen or your back, and then the catheter's in this, for simplicity's sake, roughly the same position as the labor catheter. Again, for simplicity's sake, I'm not going to get into the anatomy for simplicity's sake, but there's a little catheter in your back connected to this pain pump, and it's delivering medication just like the labor epidural is delivering medication into your spine to provide very good pain relief. And I think anyone who's had a labor epidural can really speak to the efficacy of the labor epidural, because I've done thousands of labor epidurals. And then what you're saying is, if they have breakthrough cancer pain, they can push a button on their controller and get a bolus of medication and get very good pain control without, which is in sharp contrast to having to take oral medication, which can often make you really sleepy or drowsy or constipated or a whole host of other side effects.
Correct. Just imagine, Chris. So once you take medication through mouth, it goes into your belly first. It has to be broken down into multiple parts. And those parts gets absorbed through your belly. It goes into your bloodstream. It has to go through your entire body first before it actually reaches the receptors, which are concentrated in the spinal cord to give you pain relief. So if we can bypass all that and somehow deliver the medication directly into the spine where all the pain receptors or most of the pain receptors are concentrated, then we can give much more effective, much more precise, and much more elegant pain relief to our cancer patients.
And that sounds like something that if you know someone that has cancer, that's probably something they want. I can tell you, if I had cancer, I know exactly where I would go, and I know who'd be doing my managing my pain pumps. So, and then having a full comprehensive team, of course, with a good team, like you mentioned. Any other treatment options that we have not discussed?
So as I think briefly alluded to in earlier, you know, interventions should always be a part of a compendium of care. The goal is always to improve function and quality of life. And that requires a team approach and a true interdisciplinary approach, be it some medication optimization, be it choosing the right type of interventions in a timely manner. You know, that's another difference between our cancer pain management and our chronic pain management or acute pain management. Cancer patients don't have a lot of time. The window of opportunity is very, very, very narrow. And you have to be available. You have to be aggressive, and you have to take that window of opportunity to help these patients with your treatment options. And I would also emphasize the importance of shared decision making. These cancer patients have a lot of comorbidities, and you know, their medical oncologist is their quarterback. So what we do in our practice is shared decision making. You know, we involve our medical oncologists, or if they are getting radiation, the radiation oncologists, palliative care, all the team members collectively come to an individualized plan of care for these patients. And that's the key to success. That's the key to higher patient satisfaction, and also good quality of care for these patients.
In closing, I think, so there are rules that I'll discuss. So there are rules about doctors can't discuss any individual cases and let people know what happened in individual cases. But in treating people, I'm sure you've treated thousands of people very successfully. Are there any cases and being HIPAA compliant and not sharing any like unique things that would allow the identification of people? And you've also treated people across the world. Are there any cases that speak out to you where it really stuck with you and you thought, I'm glad I was able to be part of this team and do the thing that I do to help them?
Yes, there is a case, and I would like to briefly share that case. Actually, that's the case what still keeps the fire burning and passion burning. I have to go back to my fellowship days. We had a patient with breast cancer, metastatic breast cancer, and really struggling with multiple fractures in the spine. I presented the case to my attendings that this patient is a great candidate for pain pump implantation. She was really struggling, and her main goal was to kind of spend some time with her family down in Florida. So we were able to implant the pump in her, manage the pain. The pump really improved her pain significantly. So she was able to go to Florida, come back, and was really thankful for the pump which was implanted. And right at that time, I finished my fellowship. And as I'm a immigrant, I had to go back to my home country to get my visa stamped. And I still remember, because I was actually in JFK about to catch my flight, and I get a call from this patient as a fellow. I actually had given her my cell phone number. And she was really sad because she got the diagnosis of further metastatic lesions, and she was given a short lifespan, and she was going hospice. And she really wanted to see me because I was really involved in her care. I was not able to see her, went back to India, and we said goodbyes over the phone. Unfortunately, my visa got denied, and I was stuck in India for about a good 6 months before I could come back. I did come back finally. And as soon as I reached, I got a text from my attending that that patient is still in the hospital, in hospice. And that was Christmas Eve. And I went there, I saw her, we hugged each other, and she passed away the next day. So I still, while I'm telling the story, I'm still getting the goosebumps, and I'm still having the chilling effect, because I think there was some kind of a divine intervention which actually made my visa come through, and I was able to come back and see her, because when I was talking to her on JFK, I really wanted to see her before I leave, but I could not. So it still gives me those chills. And that's one case which probably will live with me for the rest of my life.
So there is some subtlety that I think, unless you're familiar with breast cancer, is being missed. Now, if she, and I think, I'm guessing this is why it's touching for you and why you're clearly very passionate about cancer pain management. But for those who aren't picking up on the subtlety, can you explain what would have happened had she not had that pain pump?
So she was really debilitating. When we first saw her, she had multiple fractures into her spine. She was in a wheelchair. She was barely
I'm going to emphasize this because I know it's going to be missed by a fair amount of people. And that's really painful. It is really, really painful.
Yeah, we actually saw her in a wheelchair, and she was not able to do any of her activities of daily living independently. Her goal was to, spend some time with her family, which was in Florida. And the course of action, if we would not have done this pain pump, we would have actually escalated the oral opioids. She would have become more sedated, more drowsy, probably some more central side effects like hallucinations from those medications, and eventually, shorter lifespan, and unfortunately, affecting more quality of life and her function.
And I'm going to emphasize this point as well. So everyone is saying that she should have whatever pain medication she needs to keep her comfortable. No one is saying deny her pain medication. In fact, everyone's saying make her as comfortable as possible. And no one is saying that. But the problem with continually escalating the doses of the opioid medications, which unfortunately that's the only option that some programs have, is then people get really, really sleepy, and they can't really get around because they're getting all the side effects of the medications, and they can't interact with their family members. And they often have to choose between being awake and talking or but in a lot of pain, or sleeping and somewhat comfortable. So it's a very hard choice to make. And I know those details are getting missed, but the beauty of the pain pump is the pain is very well controlled, but people can be very lucid and they can travel and have dramatically better quality of life when it really matters. I hope I wasn't overspeaking.
No, you actually summarized it really well.
So on that note, I think that that leaves a very lasting impression on obviously you and the family and your family. Everyone in that community that you're serving is, I say this with 100% like sincerity, they're very lucky to have you in that hospital system.
I hope so.
All right, Dr. Kalia, thank you so much for taking the time for this podcast. Thank you so much for the excellent work you do and for the mentorship you're giving to future pain physicians who can spread this much needed therapy across the U.S.
No, thank you for having me, Chris. This was a really, really an enchanting experience to talk about cancer pain and cancer rehabilitation with you. I hope I was able to shed some light on these, esoteric concepts, but really important concepts for the compendium of cancer care.
It was It was a fantastic interview. I mean that very sincerely. So again, thank you for taking the time. Have a great night.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe and visit the Get Healthy 360 Facebook page. We are always looking for feedback and new story ideas. Thanks again, and see you next time.